Hello and welcome to NYPD Blue Balls, the podcast where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, talk about every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue. This podcast is about Season 9, Episode 20, Oedipus Wrecked, and I suggest you watch that episode before listening to this podcast, because we don't really go over the whole thing, we kind of just get right into it with what's going on, so it'd be better if you watched it. It's available on Hulu and Disney Plus, and I believe Hulu is going away and becoming Disney Plus. I don't know. I believe it's also on Amazon for purchase, but sometimes it was not there when I would go look for it. And of course, you can get it on DVDs in America, but if you can't do any of that, you can always find it by less than legal means, which I would never suggest you do. Also important to note, there is a dog in the room, Kyle's dog Echo. So you might hear him talking to the dog. You also might hear the dog jingling and jangling. Anyway, here's the episode, and it starts right now. Season 9, Episode 20, Oedipus Wrecked. Just as a reminder, we're kind of talking about the whole episode as is, not going over it, so spoilers if you haven't seen it.
Did the last episode's title have anything to do with what was happening inside? I don't remember. We didn't really talk about it.
Yeah, it was low blow.
Oh, okay.
Because Laughlin hit Clark in the nuts.
And the whole rape, you know.
Jesus.
It's a low blow.
I don't like this episode. I don't like it at all. I don't really like the characters in it. I don't like the points it's making.
As a man who smokes weed, I get it. And I'm all about it. No, I'm just kidding. I liked this episode the first time I watched it. Go ahead. You can go ahead now. Your turn. You get another point.
I don't like Metavoy's daughter. I feel like watching it twice, it feels like she was trying to manipulate him into getting out of the wedding so she didn't have to deal with her mom.
Oh, she's garbage. She's 100% garbage.
She's garbage as a human or garbage actress?
As a human. Like, as his daughter, she's garbage. She basically goes to her dad and goes, "Mom doesn't want to go to the wedding because you're going to be there." Mm-hmm. And then he goes, "Well, she's being childish. This is stupid." And then she goes, "Man, I wish she could just like make it easier on everybody." Mm-hmm. Blah, blah, blah. Maybe we just elope. Mm-hmm. And then so Metavoy goes, "No, I won't go to the wedding." And she goes, "Okay, cool."
Yeah.
And she basically goes like, "Great. Well, you did to me what my mom did, but I'm okay with you doing it because you're less of a pain in the ass."
Essentially, what it really felt like, she went in there like, "Okay, so here's the goal. I'm going to get my dad to not go to the wedding. But I'm going to make sure to let him know that's not what I want." So she said, like you mentioned, she said, "Mom doesn't want to go to the wedding." Metavoy's like, "Oh, she's being childish." And then she's like, "Okay, well, extreme. Guess I gotta elope."
Yeah.
And it's like, what? And then he's like, "Well, don't do that. If that's really the only problem, then I won't go. We'll just have a dinner." And she goes, I don't want you to do that. And he's like, "No, it's fine. We'll make a dinner for ourselves." And then she's like, "Okay."
Yeah, she's gone.
And I don't know if that was just because they didn't have a lot of time for her scene or if she's just that shitty of a person, because we haven't seen her for ever.
Well, I mean, like, what kind of a dad is Metavoy, though? Like, we have to go off what we're shown. We're basically shown that his kids are non-existent to him. Yeah. And then he says, like, "Oh, my wife drove a wedge." It's like, didn't you get, like, she wasn't 18 when you guys got divorced. Like, weren't you supposed to split custody? Like, shouldn't you have taken care of your kids? Like, I don't know. There's just like, he says some weird things where it's like, huh, that doesn't add up. Like both of your kids, from what I remember, were in middle school or high school when you got divorced in season two.
I thought they were like middle school or...
Middle school, high school, yeah. You have to do the math, right? Like 7 years. So it's been 7 years. We're in season 9.
She had to be 18 to get married, so.
Well, yeah, or unless, like, she's a 16, 17-year-old and he doesn't give a shit. Like, they had to have been in middle school, high school when it happened. Like.
And then she changes her tune when there's a hostage situation and they only mention that a detective's involved. So she's like, oh, your life? I thought your life was in danger?
Now I want you there, yeah.
Yeah, that's not the only of people's complete 180s in the face of crazy hostage situations that we'll be talking about. But the fact that she was like, hey, you don't have to. You don't have to, but I obviously want you to. Okay, I'll do it. Okay, sorry, bye. That, and then on top of that, just, yeah, she sucks. And even Jones was like, just call your wife and tell her to not be...
A bitch, basically.
And he's like, that's exactly what she wants. She wants a scene. And I was like, I think your daughter did this. I don't think your wife... I think your wife has little to do with this. In honesty.
Yeah, your daughter, like, what's unfair is that your daughter even came to you with this complaint. Like, this is not your problem. Like, your daughter, like, you are divorced now. Like, you guys aren't an entity anymore. You guys don't have to deal with this shit as a group. You deal with things separately.
I also, really like that John insults her engagement ring.
That's wild. That, like, do we think he means to do it? Or do you think he's just being like John and it just came off wrong?
It just came off wrong.
Yeah, because I knew it was coming. And then when you rewatch it, I rewatched it this time and I was like, damn, that is pretty, like, that is pretty biting. Like, it's like a subtle but, like, deep dig. It's like a deep knife.
It's like, who needs a really nice... Who really needs a nice car?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, people don't need to bathe every day. Like, it was really fucked up, but awesome, because, like, her face was like, obviously I'm insulted, and John, and John was very much like, oh, sorry, oh, ugh. But yeah, your ring is small.
He's like, oh, a small ring. Some people like that.
Geesh. A goo.
Who needs big diamonds?
Yeah, I literally wrote "what a bitch" and underlined it.
Except every commercial shows that you need a big diamond.
And I did have the question: is she just a bad actress, or is she manipulating him? And I think.
I did. Excuse me. There's plenty of bad acting, and she's not on that list. Like, she's fine. She's okay.
So the other story that's happening, God, I don't even know what it is. I don't even know. Oh, there's a DOA.
A drug deal. A lady who sells pot is killed.
They think she's a recording. Like, she has a studio.
In her back.
And they look at her Palm Pilot, and they find all these people. They bring in a real dickhead.
I feel like Glenn Howerton could have played this guy really well.
Yeah.
I think if Glenn would have been himself, or if he would have been his character from
Sonny,
but least psychopathic, but more like of the, like, be gone. Like,
yeah.
It would have been a really funny choice, because that guy tries really hard. I just kept thinking of, like, oh, this is Glenn when he's being Dennis in certain situations.
Well, yeah, he also...
But that dude's acting sucked ass, too.
But, yeah, he comes in, and they're like, so what's the deal with this woman? And then he gets like, I am allowed to ask questions, and I will.
What do you think I am, detective? Some toothless crack whore?
That you can just bully around? And it was like, well, she died, so where were you? Because you're the last one with contact. And he's like, I just bought pot from her. And Sipowicz has that line. He got out of that prick suit pretty quickly. But they find out, okay, so she deals pot. So we're dealing with people buying pot, not recording artists. They bring in another guy, and this other guy seems pretty...
He seems like a reject Big Lebowski character. He seems like a guy you see at Lebowski Fest.
Okay.
We're talking about the guy, we're talking about the main guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He he's definitely like, no one in the writer's room has ever smoked pot.
Yep.
They're all cops or like stuffy white men. Mm-hmm. And so this was their like, oh, I know a stoner guy.
I know what stoners are like.
I know, but he's got to be fat because he eats a lot.
He's also got to be paranoid about every question he's asked and worried about getting other people in trouble.
Yeah.
And he also carries a gun. And
what's all stoners do?
All stoners pack and heat, and turns real simple situations into hostage crises.
The escalation is wild. Like the paranoia, rest in peace, Ozzy Osbourne, is wild.
Yeah, it's bananas. He gives all the right answers. He's like, I just bought pot from her. I don't know anything about her roommates. She was alone when I was there. Just buying pot, no big deal. I don't want to get her in trouble. And they're like, cool, write down that. We're going to go look into some stuff. They look into his past. He got charged with arson in Topeka, Kansas. And they're all like, hey, so you ever lived in Kansas? And he's like, no. And then they're like, oh, well, you know, we just got to run some prints and double check it with this thing. He's like, well, someone stole my identity. It's a whole thing. And then Simblitz is like, okay, well, we'll get it cleared up. And the guy's like, I answered your questions. Like, when can I go? And then Simblitz is like, we're going to take care of this. And then he could go, feels in his jacket, finds two clips to a tiny gun, turns around, the guy has a gun in his face. And he's like, you should have just let me leave. And it was like, what?
Which, again, there's a ton of horrible acting. This man's not on the list.
He's not on the list? Daniel Roebuck.
Kirk, he is the list.
Daniel Roebuck is the guy we're talking about. He's that guy who's been in a little bit of everything, but most notably, Final Destination.
He's a decent like character actor, too, which
the
is...
The Fugitive,
which
US
is a
Marshals.
Bummer.
Yeah, it's just... It's like you said, nobody knows what a stoner is like.
No. No one who wrote it knew what the person should act like. Like, this man has the, like... He reacts like a meth head. Mm. He doesn't react like someone who smokes a lot of weed. He reacts as someone who's like a meth head and is like freaking out and feels like they're about to be like, that's what he acts like. But,
and then he says, he explains that the arson was some dude stole his idea and he was upset with him and then his house burned down and blamed it on him. So everybody assumed it was him, but it wasn't him. Then he's like, do you know what the government can do? And Sipwitz is like, yeah, I'm not a fan of the government either. I was in Vietnam. He's like, you were in Vietnam?
Yeah, then he gets this like weird boner.
He gets this weird Vietnam boner.
Like he just watched Platoon and like...
He just watched Ken Burns Vietnam.
He's like really into it.
But he also was like, yeah, like, they're just going to kill me, man. Like it's all like paranoia craziness. And then he also says... He gets into the Jimmy Carter possibly decriminalizing weed.
Yeah, this is where it got like, this is where for me it was like, oh, these are just like stuffy white men. Like, I know a lot of stoners, they don't think about that stuff. Like, well, they're not sitting there like upset about that pot hasn't been decriminalized yet. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. It just felt like the things he was bringing up was just like, oh, you just thought like, let me get a bunch of stoner facts about weed from politics and just, like, kind of write it in.
Well, what bothered me about it is, like, everything he's saying there is, like, fact that is somewhat understandable. Like, yeah, they were going to possibly decriminalize pot. It makes no sense. It would have cleared up the prisons of nonviolent drug offenders. It would have freed up a bunch of money going towards the wrong things. Basically, he gives... a speech with a bunch of information I agree with, but it's coming from the same guy that's like, yeah, the government stole my idea, man, and they're going to come and they're going to kill me, and nobody cares about me. That's why I have a gun to your head, and I'm freaking out. And I'm like,
hey.
That's why I was like, I don't like how they're portraying this character where it's like, oh, so some of the things he's saying.
Like he's a schizo.
100% true and correct. He's also a fucking crazy person.
Yeah, and I agree. And it downplays the validity of him. What I loved about this episode is they kept going to that shot. And you know what shot I'm talking about. The looking through the two-way mirror shot.
Yeah.
They did it with Connie. They did it with Junior. They did it with when they brought the SWAT team in. They did it with everybody. They did that slow look through the mirror with the reflection of, like, who's looking back in there. And I asked this question last episode, and I got no answer, and it's been a couple of days now. Do we think the head of the tactical team knew the Bluths during this time?
Because I think
the Bluths' business dealings are only in Southern California. They're not like a worldwide, countrywide. They're just very much like populated in Southern California, Orange County area. So do we think he loses his arm in a tactical situation?
If I say yes, will you end this bit about the Bluth family and the rest of the
becomes head of security for the Bluths and then just becomes friends with George?
I think that guy was... there's a lot of things that guy does that bother me. One
of them is he showed up for work.
Like him butting heads with the boss was like, why are you doing this right now?
Because he's in charge. It's a big dick off.
And then
you should wear those pants when you go to one of those big dick offs. So you can show that you shouldn't be a part of it. Get it? Do you get it? Do you mean to explain the joke?
No, I get it.
Because you're at a big dick off.
Are we going to talk about the fucking show at all?
That's how bad this episode is.
Well, the thing that...
Talk about it. What else do you want to talk about? Well, I want to talk... all of a sudden cares because she sees a gun to his Sipwith said?
What I found interesting about their back and forth was like... every single thing the guy was like, I have the permission. I'm going to do this. The boss goes, no. And then it just doesn't happen. So...
That's a good point. Like, who's in charge?
Like, every single thing, he's like, yeah, could you get out of here so we can work? He goes, no, this is my squad. He's like, okay. He's like, I'm going to go get him some weed. Just stay right here. And he's like, you got 15 minutes at the bus. They'll go, why?
They got him weed, Kirk. Why?
But I love how he's like, why? He's not going anywhere. Yeah. Why do you give me a timetable? It doesn't fucking matter.
I mean, this does show that they just love to shoot first.
Well, it was like we have two shots, one to break the glass and one to hit him. And I was like, those guys better get that shit right. Because
they probably practice it numerous times. Like, and it's probably like when this guy shoots, as soon as you, like, it's like a, you know what I mean?
But, they go get him weed. And
that's wild. It's wild that Andy's like, I know how we can fix this. And it's like, hey, Lou, can you just go get me some pot? And it's like, no, what did he say?
Says nothing laced and no ragweed.
Yeah, no ragweed, which is bold.
Yeah.
That's bold. You have a gun to a dude's head, he's trying to help you out, and you're like, make sure the weed's good.
Make sure the weed you get from the evidence locker you have downstairs is good. But it's also interesting because that also proves that weed is not that big of a fucking deal. Because he knew that if we get him weed, he's going to get distracted writing the story, and he's going to put the gun down, and he can put his hand on it.
I don't think... What?
You think
Andy was, like, processed it in his brain with a gun to his head and was like, hey, if I get him some weed, he'll have to write a story. And then while he's writing that story...
No, he knows that he'll be more docile after the weed.
I think what he thought was, hey, he's fired up right now. The one thing that it seems like this man loves in his life is weed. Let's get it for him, and we'll go from there. But let's get him to calm down so he's not trying to kill me.
I think he understands that it will calm him down, which is what he wants to do.
But the fact that you thought he came up with, like, a fucking plan, like he's Jason Bourne or some
That's
shit.
That's what
like,
he did. He gave her the weed.
He reacted.
And he's like, how about you write your story? I'll get it out to the press. And then he put his hand over the thing.
He started to calm down. And he was, yes, I think the plan started to build. I don't think he sat there with a gun to his head and mapped the plan out. And then was like, okay, phase one, get him weed. I think he thought, like, oh, this guy's riled up. I pissed him off. What's the one way we can get him to calm down? And he goes, I've been trying. I'm asking him about this. I'm asking him about that. He's not answering. But when I say, hey, buddy, you want some weed? His eyes get about as big as Frisbee discs. And he does it. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
I just think that he knew the weed would get him calmer.
I agree with you on that. I agree with you on that part. It's when you said that he made a plan. I was like, I don't think he thought that far ahead.
But also,
what is he, Columbo?
Also, when the cops burst in after Sipowicz gets the gun out of his hand, and just the look on his face was very funny.
Yeah, it's a wild choice.
Because it was also like, Sipowicz like grabs the gun, and he's like, there are a ton of people outside, and they are going to shoot you. Yeah. So I need you to stay calm, let go of the
gun.
That
2 minutes is pretty good.
Yeah.
When he puts the hand on the gun, when you see it happen slowly,
mm-hmm.
and then you see how he reacts, and Sipowicz just is like, hey, hey. Like, and Sipowicz just kind of being like, hey, we're cool, man. We're good. Like, don't freak out, because if you freak out, they're going to murder
gonna
you.
They're going to shoot you.
And we don't want that, but you're done. Like, just let's do this soft. Let's do this. Like, that 2 minutes was pretty good. And then it kills it with the face he makes when they burst in.
They burst in. He's like, and
he sounds like Paul Bear.
Oh, the Undertaker! Oh, your brother,
the King,
from hell. Then he also was like, "I'm going to give you to my lieutenant, Rodriguez," and then like, you just see him look at this like big group of bodies, and he just like slowly gets handed off, and he's just like shuffling, and then he looks outside and he's like, oh shit, I caused all this. It's like, yeah, duh.
They are like, for a man who's just held someone hostage in a police station, he gets treated very, very chill.
Yeah,
like it's a very chill situation after they burst into the door.
Yeah,
they're just like, bam, okay, we're good, like we're chill now.
Yeah, thinking about every other time there's been a hostage situation in that office, that person usually gets pretty hurt.
Which I think we have to start discussing, like, why are they having so many hostage situations in that office?
And they wonder why IAB looks at their fucking
right?
precinct.
Their logs and shit, yeah.
The other, the story wraps up for the woman selling pot because one woman was shot in the head but survived. And in the hospital said it was Mike from Jamaica. So they start looking for Jamaicans named Mike, and then they realize, no, it's a guy named Mike from Jamaica, Queens.
Jamaica, Queens.
And they get a hit on who that is. They pick him up, and they get him to confess really quick by just saying, by the way, one of the women lived. And then he's like, okay. Which is like, oh, wow.
It's a classic NYPD Blue wrap-up.
Yeah. The other case that Connie and Rita got is another case that I'm like, fuck this.
This case is wild. The mom?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you remember how it starts?
Yeah, the dog is going crazy outside of the subway or something like that. Like she's walking and there's a police dog doing something else.
Get called to a bomb threat.
Yes, 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 yes.
When they get there,
no.
A cop goes like, hey, so there's no bomb, but this is crazy. We've got this
ex-police dog.
We got this ex-drug dog who's a bomb-sniffing dog, and he went crazy at this woman's purse.
Echo. It's on your carpet.
He went crazy on this woman's purse, and we open it up. It's got a key of
heroin?
Cocaine?
Something white.
It was a key of cocaine and ecstasy.
Like one key each, or like it equaled a key?
I think it was a key of...
Stop.
I think it was a key of cocaine and just a bunch of ecstasy is what they said.
Okay.
And she's like, I don't have any idea. Yeah. I live up in Kingston Falls. I'm down here to shop.
She does a decent job being like an aloof, like, like suburban woman.
She's very much like, I have no idea. No idea how it's in my purse. No idea. They get her back to the station. She's like, I have no idea. No idea what's in the purse. And then they go, well, how much is it? And she goes, well, no, what happens is they do a little searching on her. They find out she has a dirtbag son that got ran out of their hometown.
And now lives in Manhattan.
So they go to her and they go, well, was it your son? And then she goes, yep, it's mine. My drugs.
Well, she has a pretty good moment where, like, she acts where she, like, has this realization of, like, oh, shit, it is my son. Like, it is, and then, like, she kind of, like, you see her, like, put it all together, like, the history. Like,
and she says, yep, they're my drugs. And they're like, oh, how much did you think you'd get for it? And then she says prices. And they're like, yeah, you're way off on both figures. So.
Yeah, well, they said, what were your plans for it? And what were the, like. And she was like, I was going to sell it. And they were like, well, how much did you pay for it? And how much were you going to sell it for? And she said, like, $3,000 and double. And then they were like, you're way off on all of that.
Yeah. And they basically, it's weird because it's for a story that they seem to just wrap up to get to the main story, which is the hostage situation, they spend a lot of time saying the same shit, which is, well, if you don't confess, you're going to go to jail. And they put her in the cell and tell her, if you don't confess, you're going to go to jail. And she's like, it was my son's. He told me it was a gift for his friend up in Kingston Falls. So they bring him in. Classic doucher.
And thing to remember, and thing to know is he's on strike two.
So yeah, he knows if it's another one, he's going for a while.
25 to life, I think. He gets something like that.
And he says, no idea what you're talking about. Maybe my mom's got a habit. And they're all like, so you know you're hanging your mom out to dry.
Yeah, which is, that's really shitty.
So they bring him into the cell she's in to guilt him. He doesn't guilt until he hears her say, I love you no matter what. And then he's like, they're my drugs. And then cries. But what's so funny is,
how was it again?
They're my drugs. That's not a good impression of him. But
like Theo Vaughn.
But it is funny how Connie and Rita both kind of give this look like, ugh, this guy. And it's like, well, it's supposed to be kind of like a tender moment. And also, like.
Yeah, but I get their whole thing because it wasn't until, like, right at the last minute. And then her saying, like, as he's being escorted out. And she's going to be left in a cell. Does he say, I love you?
Yeah.
Or does she say, I love you? And then he goes like, oh, fuck. Mm. But I get it. Like, take the weight. Like, take the heat. I'm going to go away for 25 to life. Your life's almost over. Like,
wow.
Just what's 5 years for you? You know what I mean?
It's also interesting how, because usually in a situation like that, it's like, an old lady, she has no idea what's in her purse, and then they know she doesn't know the prices at all. The fact that they're like, you're gonna go to prison for a long time. It's like, well, you've spoken to other old people involved with crimes that they probably definitely should have gone away for, but then you're like, well, we'll talk to them.
Yeah,
but you can't do it for this woman who's like, I have no idea how all these drugs got into my bag,
especially because she has no record.
It's like, what are they going to say? Like,
she doesn't have any, like, a history of doing something like this. Unless she's such a good drug dealer, you, like, never notice.
She's the fucking Walter White of Kingston Falls.
Walter didn't sell. Walter just produced. So he would be she would be the Jesse Plemons of New Mexico.
Whatever his character name was, because we don't know.
It's not Jesse Plemons?
Well, Jesse Plemons is the actor, isn't it?
No, it's Aaron Paul.
That is Jesse Pinkman.
Pinkman. I'm thinking of Plemons. I'm thinking of the actor who's in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesse. It's Jesse Pinkman. Yeah. No, I can touch you.
So the thing that does a complete 180 in this episode that I was like, okay. So Sipowicz has this near death experience. He gets out of it. Everyone gives him a hug, pat on the back. He for some reason, doesn't make it home quickly. And Connie is with Austin Majors, a.k.a. Theo Sipowicz. And Sipowicz comes home, hugs Theo, says, get ready for bed. Then sits on the couch with Connie and says, can you stay a while? And she'll say, as long as you want. And I think that's the moment where you go, okay, I guess they're together.
No, I wouldn't say together. I could say maybe establishing a different level of seriousness.
Different relationship.
Yeah. I don't think I would put them as like solely just like, I mean, they kind of act like it, but that's not that conversation.
I don't know. It literally felt like he was in this life or death situation. He gets out and he goes, why don't I want this hot woman around all the time? Why am I embarrassed? Why am I weirded out by it? She wants to fucking hang out and take a ride on this hedgehog. She's fucking got it.
She wants to meet my knuckles. My knuckles to my Sonic.
No one could hear you, by the way.
I'm saying too much of your knuckle right now.
Just comfortable shorts, man.
They can't be. As tight as they are around your dick right now, there's no way they're comfortable. There's no way. There's no fucking way. Your dick looks like Han Solo in Carbonite. That's what those pants make your dick look like right now. You're like a fly up against a window. Like, Jesus. Like, stand up, pull them down or something. But, like... You got two burritos stuffed in a bag.
I was trying to think of anything else about this episode, but it's
a shitty fucking episode. It is bad.
It's not good.
It's really bad. Like, it's a bad, it's just bad writing. It's, they're writing about something I feel like they don't know anything about, or they have no frame of reference, but like, or there was the one stoner guy on the writing group that's been like, I got this idea. And then finally Milch was like, sure. Or Botchko was like, sure, yeah, let's do it. But then they, like, rewrote the whole thing and, like, made it some, like, weird clusterfuck on the day by, like, doing a bunch of improv and shit.
Also, the one thing that did happen in this episode that was kind of like, what the fuck, was Jones had to be, like, nursemaid to everybody. Like, we find out, okay, so Medavoy didn't toss the guy correctly.
Yeah, that's a good point to bring up. That's important because Medavoy... Part of his whole daughter's storyline is that he's distracted and sad and like, which is totally understandable. He's not going to his daughter's wedding.
Yeah.
And he even feels like it's his fault. It is his fault, but.
And then Jones is like, don't worry about it. It could happen to anybody. Like, gives him kind of like encouraging words. Then when they go to pick up, I think it's Mike from Jamaica. When they go to pick up that guy, fucking John Clark is sitting at like a newsstand or whatever. And he's like, oh, it's already on the news. And he's like, why didn't Medavoy do it right? And he's like, look, we all make mistakes, man. Medavoy feels just as badly as you would want him to. And it's like, why does Jones have to be the voice of reason that calms everybody the fucking down right now? Like,
because he's not really tied to anybody. Like, him and Sipowicz work together, but I wouldn't say they're like great friends. And, like, you know, the only person I feel like he might care for is Medavoy right now, because Medavoy is his partner, so he cares how Medavoy feels. But I think it's just, yeah, he's the only one that's not super tied to anybody that's involved, so he's got to be the, like, the Rock, I guess, like the Dwayne Johnson.
Dwayne the Rock Johnson?
Yeah.
When...
He's going to be the Rampage.
When... When John Clark is talking to Jones, he goes, yeah, they sent some guys over to his house in Brooklyn. They say there's tons of guns and tons of journals spouting nonsense. And I was like, yeah, a lot of stoner pads filled with guns and filled with journals filled with nonsense.
One thing that stoners love doing is writing a lot.
Writing a lot and cleaning their guns.
Was black lights. I bet you then you weren't at his house. You weren't at the right house.
There was not even one copy of Dark Side of the Moon.
If there's not one poster and one copy, then did you even smoke?
No.
Did you even smoke, bro?
Did you even
lift, bro?
Also, when Sipowicz walks out of the room, what's his name says, "Sorry, Andy." And it kind of felt really weird. Oh, it was like, "Sorry, Andy."
Yeah, it's the wrong time. Like, Medavoy should have had a conversation with him like the next day in the locker room, mm-hmm. or like before he went home, or called him that night. But like, as soon as he walked out, you met him, and Andy's not going to remember that because Andy's still getting over the shock of having a gun to his head.
Yeah. And another kind of through line, if you remember from last episode, John Clark Jr. and Rita banged.
Oh, yeah.
And they are late to work and get the beeper in.
Yeah, both get the same beep.
As they're getting dressed again.
But she's got to go home and change.
She's got to what?
Go home and change. Because otherwise she's wearing the same outfit as last night.
And Sipowicz knows something happened, but he's not letting on that he knows anything. He's just kind of making faces and listening. And then there's one moment where he goes, "So what's the deal?" And then Clark's like, "Look, I went home, and I relaxed after the fight. That's all that happened." And he goes, "What's going on with our suspect list?"
Yeah, he's asking him a question about work, yeah.
And he's like, yeah, totally. It's like, clearly you banged Rita. Clearly. Like, clearly, bro. Clearly. Let's just calm down.
I mean, he's got some pico de gallo around his mouth. You know what I'm saying? That's how we all knew. Because in Laughlin's words, she caliente.
Fucking Laughlin's such a tool.
Well, man.
I got nothing else about this episode. I agree. It's not very good.
Nah, dude, it fucking sucks. Like, it's bad. Like, trying to rewatch it again now, it's like, it's rough. It's a hard episode. Like, when it starts, and as soon as he takes him hostage, you're kind of just like, oh, fuck. Like, I forgot all of this garbage happens.
Yeah, not to speak out of turn or, you know, go too much into it, but the next episode ain't that great either. And in my opinion, there's a big giant flag in it that's bad, and its name is Baldwin.
Oh, really?
The Baldwin.
Wow.
Was like it
acting or
Stephen Baldwin?
Oh,
is it Stephen Baldwin?
No, I think that's Billy.
It's one of the Baldwins.
I don't think it's Stephen.
It's not Stephen.
It's Alex.
It's not Alec.
And I don't think it's Billy because Billy's the like the younger hot one everyone used to say.
Yeah, it's one of the reject Baldwins, and he's doing his best Alec Baldwin impression. But dear Lord, does he suck? But that's next episode. And then the final episode, I didn't realize the final episode of season 9. I didn't realize it until it started. It's an hour and a half long. And
oh, it has to be William, because there's only William, Stephen, and Alec.
So it's Billy.
Yeah, it has to be Billy.
Yeah, the hotness wore off.
Daniel Baldwin.
Daniel Baldwin? Anyway, it's a Baldwin. And anyway. Yeah, I can't think of anything else to say about this episode. It's just not good. And
it's not. But yeah, I. Oh, okay. How do we say this? Yeah, it's just not good. Like, it's just not good at all. There's really like no redeeming like quality from it either. You know.
Yeah, it just doesn't. It doesn't.
Like, I wouldn't recommend people watching it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of NYPD Blue Balls. I didn't have a lot of positive things about this episode, but you know, who knows what's coming up. Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is available on AshRealistPodcast.com, where you find your podcast. Please rate and review it. on whatever you're using to listen to it. It's how people see it in the algorithm. And more importantly, people might check out the best show ever, NYPD Blue. If you just need more NYPD Blue in your life, there's a couple of books out there. True Blue, written about the first couple seasons by creators and consultants. There's What Would Sipwits Do, a collection of articles about the show. There's Gene Kendall's, an unofficial guide to NYPD Blue. There are two in-universe stories by Max Allen Cullen's Blue Bloods and Blue Beginnings. If you find them for a decent price, I'd say they're worth the read. Thank you again for listening to this. There should be a new episode every other Tuesday. And in the event there isn't, sometimes, you know, life finds a way. But we'll be here until the end of this show. At least I hope so.